We want to thank you for listening today. This audio sermon is a ministry of Faith Baptist Church, a place where you belong. Now let's listen to the message of truth from God's Word.
For right now, we are in Acts chapter number 28, as we're going to look at a sermon entitled Uncharted Paths that I hope to be able to bring some hope and help to you to today. You know, no one sets out in their 20s. No one sets out desiring to feel lost, desiring to feel disenchanted or to be disconnected. No one graduates college and is just thinking, man, things are nowhere but down from here. It's going to be a bad. You graduate in a case like that, you're very optimistic about what life has in store, and you're very much looking forward to how you can put your mark on the world and how things can change, and rightfully so. I mean, I don't know any man or woman of any age who just looks forward or looks at their life in a dismal way of like, I just can't wait for my life to collapse. You know, that's not typically the way that we look at life. It's not the way that we do. And what we find is that you live a little, though. Life happens. And once you live a little, sickness and death and job loss and uncertainty and family drama and relationship issues has its own strain to it, does it not? Has its own stressors to it. You live a little and you think, man, I've seen movies, I've read books, I've heard of this type of these stressors that take place in people's lives, but they happen to other people. I see them happening to other people, but that's not really going to be my story. That's not going to be how I live life. That's not going to be the way I experience. And these uncharted paths, though, as much as we want to pretend that these hard times aren't coming, everyone experiences them, but really we never plan for them. We don't want to talk about it. We don't really expect it. These uncharted paths that no one expects, but everyone experiences. I've got a few here for you that there's not in your handout, but you could write them down if you wanted to. We could list a whole lot of them, but there were so many things that come into our life when we find ourselves here and we don't imagine ourselves being here where we experience this fatigue, where we think, especially when we're young, we're Superman, we're Wonder Woman. We can do anything. We can accomplish anything. We can work all kinds of hours. I only need like 2 hours of sleep. I'm good to go. You know, I go through college and I've got all of these things. I can just go, 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 go. And then you find out when you live a little and you have some experience and all these responsibilities, we call it burnout, where you just burn out. Candle at both ends. You're like, I got six ends. I don't know. They're all burning. We're in trouble. Like you see the fatigue just set in. And you find yourself at wit's end, so to speak. Frustrations happen. You don't have to be in a relationship very long or be with so many things and understand that the stressors that all of these things happen, the selfishness revealed, the unmet expectations, frustrations with a boss or with a neighbor or with a family member, these things just weigh on us like a heavy blanket. Just weigh on us. We find failure through so many different things. We often don't prepare for this, but failure of our health that we just don't think is going to actually happen until that blood test comes back. We don't think it's going to happen until the doctor says, I need to see you tomorrow. When the boss has you come in and it's game over, and you're being let go. Finances, never thinking that we would end up in bankruptcy, that this would happen. Fatigue, frustration, failure, fear. I mean, this is one of the biggest things of all, crippling us from time to time. And it gets all of us. And we could name more and more, but we're not going to because it's depressing, right? We could name all of these things. You're like, oh, that's right, I feel bad. I'm here in church. All of these things, we could just keep naming them again and again and again. But here's the good news. The good news is this fatigue, frustration, failure, and fear doesn't have to be the end of your story. Doesn't have to define you. It doesn't have to be your reality. Your story doesn't have to end like this. None of this has to be your final story. You know, I remember vividly, at 36 years of age, my wife having a heart attack, standing outside of a hospital room, arms crossed, and seeing the name flashing on the screen, and doctors running in, and things happening, and thinking, this isn't supposed to happen. I walk through this with other people. I don't deal with this myself. I remember speaking to one of our godly men here at the church, thankful for some of the older godly men that were here. I'm looking for him now, Brother Jerry Gordon. I don't know if you remember this conversation, but I was standing there, and as I stood there, I had my arms crossed, and I just said, "You don't expect to go through this at 36. And he lovingly just grabbed my forearm because I was standing just like this, and he just had this tender look in his eyes, and he says, "Pastor, you don't expect it at 86. I don't know if you remember that conversation. I said, "You just don't think it's going to be you. You're just not ever ready for that moment." And so I want you to write this down if you're keeping notes. We always think we're the exception to the rule until we're not. Right? We all think we're the exception to the rule until we're not. We eventually all find ourselves on uncharted paths in life. Things that we didn't think would ever come to us. The phone call that would never come. The issue that would never arise. This uncharted path in life. A new place or situation in which we have zero experience. 2019 has been such an experience for our family. We started off the year. Surprise Christmas bills, right? You know those things that you didn't realize how much had happened and all of these things. Not a surprise, but it was a surprise. And then right on the heels of that, $6,000 in medical bills I didn't know about, weren't expecting. Plumbing debacle, about $1,000. Water backing up into the house. Flat tire on my truck. You know, some of these are no big deal, right? But they start to add up. Shredded the tire of my wife's car. Because the warning light was on saying low tire pressure, but I just thought it was a malfunction, right? You know, that thing just shredded the tire. Failed husband 101 more than a few times. Parenting struggles, owed $4,000 in taxes this year because I'm an idiot. It's my fault. Hurt my back. Went out of commission for a while. Missed a dear friend's birthday. In the work front, there were so many things happening job-wise and groups and space challenges and missed opportunities, falling behind on college work, wrecked my truck, received a ticket for reckless driving. Dryer quit working. Appliances broke down. Spent 3 months dealing with my dad's health, going back and forth to North Carolina. At the same time, my wife's health, I'm sorry, her family's health, was going down at the same time. And I was up in North Carolina 5 times. She's been up there 4 times. Double booked appointments, messed things up, stood up appointments. Just things are going bad, right? Just continue. Both boys end up in the ER at different times. The one slammed the youngest son's finger in a door. Stitches. Garbage disposal died. Friend of mine that I worked for a number of years, I wasn't able, he died. He's funeral was up in Jacksonville, and I wasn't able to go because I was out of town. My dad died. My mom's moving down, trying to sell a house, buy a house with an apartment attached to it. Kids change schools, big changes at church, staff changes. Sprinkler system broke, my grass withered up, my flower beds got diseased, my sink isn't working. And I'm pretty sure if I had a dog, he'd hate me, I think. That's what I think. And you know what happens? And Pastor Todd goes on vacation. Thanks a lot. I'm the nerve. Hey, what do you do? What do you do when you find yourself on uncharted paths? What do you do? Well, Paul is no stranger to being derailed. Is no stranger to his life going off script. This is nothing that's new for him. It's really been his whole Christian walk of what all has transpired in him. And in our text, to give you a little bit of context before we read, Paul has been imprisoned for his faith multiple times, and this is nearing the end of his actual ministry. And he is imprisoned for his faith, about to stand before the emperor to be accused because he's of Roman descent. He has this right to stand before them. And after 2 years of waiting in Caesarea, after 2 years of waiting to finally stand before the emperor, he gets on a ship to go. Now, he's been beaten. He's been left for dead. He's had all kinds of awful things happen to him. He ends up on this ship. They end up in a storm, and they end up shipwrecked, and he ends up deserted on this island with a whole bunch of other guys. This is what ends up happening to him, and they shipwreck in this small little island of the south of Sicily called Malta. And this island was ruled by Rome, but there were some Phoenician people that were actually running the island, that were actually there, and these people were very hospitable, taking in these folks who had just come off the ship. They're wet, they're cold, they're storming, it's just nasty. You can imagine a big storm and the boat, and everybody's just coming in off the shore, and these folks were very hospitable to him and start making a fire to try to help warm them up, and apparently Paul was helping. Shock, surprise, Paul finds a way to serve and get plugged in. I want you to look at Acts chapter 28. This is the lead up, the context into where we find ourselves in Acts chapter number 28. Verse number 1, and when they were escaped, speaking about the shipwreck, you can read about it in the previous chapter, but then they knew that the island was called Melita, also known as Malta, later called Malta. And the barbarous people showed us no kind. Now, it's really funny. It's not funny. The Greeks patronizingly called anybody that didn't speak Greek barbarians. You don't speak our language, you're barbaric. Sound like Americans, I don't know. But these barbarous people they didn't fail to show us the utmost kindness, is what he says here. For they kindled a fire and received every one of us because of the present rain and because of the cold. This is a shipwreck that has happened, a storm that has happened. I mean, it's not like it's sunshine outside. This is the scene that's unfolding. And Paul had gathered a bunch of sticks and laid them on a fire. And there came a viper out of the heat and fastened on his hand. His day got better, didn't it? And he continues with the barbarian talk, right? The barbarians saw the venomous beast hanging on his hand, and they said to him, no doubt this man's a murderer. That's good. Whom though he hath escaped the sea, vengeance suffereth not to let him live. Good grief. And he shakes off the beast into the fire, and somehow, says he felt no harm. And howbeit, they looked upon him when he should have swollen or fallen down or died suddenly. And after they had looked upon him a great while, they're looking upon him for a while, and they saw no harm to him, they changed their minds and said, well, he must be a god. People are fickle, aren't they? Right? Gosh, wow. Let's think about Paul's uncharted path for a minute. I mean, everything that's even led up to this moment is a completely uncharted path in Paul's life that we don't have time to completely unearth. But in the midst of yet another challenging situation, of one challenge after another, after another, after another, he finds himself in this challenging situation. Paul's mind, you see in the text, immediately goes to serving, gathering sticks and allowing things to happen. He didn't view his problem as problems, but he viewed his problems rather as opportunities to exalt Christ. This was, you know, how did Paul exalt Christ in this uncharted path he was on? What did this look like? I want you to notice that when he was stranded, he served the needs of others. When stranded, he served the needs of what other people had. They had needs, and Paul, instead of just sitting down feeling sorry for himself, said, there's some folks that need some things. There's probably some folks in this shipwreck that got banged up. You can read how everyone was saved alive, but it didn't say everyone was uninjured. There's probably some folks who are not able. He's able to walk and take care of himself, and he starts to gather some things together and help some people in the midst of being stranded. Now, we all know what it's like to be stranded. We all know what it's like to be left alone and isolated all to ourselves. We know what it's like to feel like nobody cares. We know what it's like to feel that way. Even if it might not be your reality, it's how we feel about things. You see, and in the midst of whatever challenge or difficulty that you or I may face, whatever it is, it's not really about whether my storm is bigger than your storm or your trial is bigger than your spouse's trial or whether it's not about whose is greater, but it's really a matter of how much am I willing to act like Christ in this moment? How much am I willing to show a Christ-like spirit? And as always, Paul made himself useful. We see that he started to gather sticks, and if the fire is to be kept up and to be blazing, it just makes sense that you have to feed the fire. And Paul takes time and gathers these sticks together to try to fuel the fire. What you don't find is that Paul, standing on his dignity, or Paul taking time to be himself who's wet and cold and frustrated and irritated, no doubt. No, he's not even fighting for a place near the fire. Instead, he just went off to keep the fire blazing for the benefit of other people. No task is too small for the servant of God who has the mind of Christ. He taught this to the church of Philippi in Philippians chapter 2. Let's think about his plight for a moment. Two ways that he was stranded. He was stranded physically. This is his physical condition. We know what it's like to be left alone or to feel like we're off on an island all by ourselves, but we probably don't know what it's like to physically be stranded on Gilligan's Island, right? We probably don't know what that's like. We've never really had that particular moment, but we've certainly had this. He is physically stranded. After more than 2 weeks of struggling to survive a storm, only for the ship to completely be decimated, and Paul is now cold, wet, hungry, and fatigued, and he's stuck on an island. Now, he's not just here temporarily. As he's landed here, he has nowhere to stay for winter now. Now he's on this island for a good number of months. More uncharted paths. More trails that he didn't plan on going, deserted and stranded here on this island. It's not the first time Paul's been isolated. He would later go on to write these words to Timothy, because this really gives us an idea, a window into his seeming continual mindset and his personality. As he says in 2 Timothy, as he told Timothy again at another date, he says, at first no man stood with me, but all forsook me. And I pray it not be late to their charge. And here's his mindset. You can see it. Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me and strengthened me. Church, he'll never let you go. He won't let you go. Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me and strengthened me. I don't know what trial that you might be going through, but maybe you could name them, or you could read a whole page of what I just read a moment ago, and then at the end of every one of them, say, notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me. Notwithstanding, the Lord is good. Notwithstanding, God is faithful. Notwithstanding, he is there all the time, even in my physical abandonment. Not only this, he was politically stranded. Paul is a prisoner of Rome. And after being stuck in Caesarea for 2 years, he's stuck again. He's forced to appeal to Caesar. After being examined, they couldn't find a reason, a plausible reason, to actually put these legitimate charges against him. So they send him to Caesar. He appeals. He goes and, you know, is being ushered to go talk to Caesar and make his case there. In other words, he like a political pawn. Ever been used like a pawn, just kind of pushed around and bumped around? Paul knows what that's like. We know what it's like to be captured and to be bumped around and to be tossed around. I was reading this week a story on a POW. The prisoner of war, to read the actual definition of what a prisoner of war is, he or she is a person who's been captured by the enemy and held hostage in the context of a conflict. In the situation where the opposition or the enemy now controls the movements, the actions, and the reaction of the person who has been captured. When I began thinking as I saw this story unfold, I thought of all of the many different times that we ourselves have been spiritual POWs. Trapped and captured in our own addictions, in our own problems, in our own bents, in our own depressions, we find ourselves in this, we're stuck with drugs and sex and pornography and alcohol and codependency and gambling, where we're stuck and there's no way out. This is our actual reality again and again and again. And what we find with Paul is, though he was stranded, he gathers all this firewood together and says, I'm going to take time to serve somebody. I'm going to gather this firewood and I'm just going to go make sure that there's some other people who need some help, and I'm going to go serve them, which is one of the best things you can do when you find yourself feeling sorry for yourself, is to go pick yourself up, go help somebody else out. And you're just going to find, not only are you going to find strength for that, you're going to find people are going through a lot worser things. That's not a word, but I made it up. Worser things than you are. A lot worser. Paul went to get firewood and he never stopped serving. You know, sometimes we allow trials and difficulties and problems to just paralyze us. And it's exactly where the devil wants for us. But wouldn't you know it, as he's gathering the sticks, you see there in verse number 3, isn't this the way it is? You're like, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go help somebody. I'm feeling bad for myself. I'm going to go help somebody. And then when he goes and helps somebody, you saw what happened, right? snake comes up out of the fire and bites him. But you find that still didn't stop him. He still just kept going. So I want you to notice that we said, first of all, that when stranded, we're going to serve the needs of others. But when you're injured, he just kept impacting the lives of other people. He didn't let the thing stop him. He didn't let it just knock you, oh, well, you know, I guess this is it for me. I'm just going to roll over and die. This wasn't his mindset. It wasn't his continual reality. As he gathers these sticks together, you can just imagine going into the woods and gathering up all of these sticks. And as he goes and throws the sticks into the fire, one of the sticks is alive and is not very fond of the fire. As he throws the wood into the fire, the viper comes and latches on a hold of him. Now, this isn't some fake production. This isn't somebody like, well, I think this was a black snake that they mistook for a viper or something unpoisonous. These folks of this island, they knew what kind of snake this was. They saw what kind of snake this was, and they fully well expected him to swell up and fall over within moments of being struck by this snake. I don't know how Paul just keeps on going, because I would imagine at some point you're like, I've been beaten half to death. I've been left. I've been thrown in prison for 2 years. I've been on this ship. It shipwrecks. I'm finally serving people. I go to help them. I get bit by a snake. I think we all would quit for less. You know, sometimes in the Christian life, this is a hard reality. Sometimes in the Christian life, you're going to get bit. And sometimes one of the hardest things is you get bit by other Christians. And you're like, I don't understand. Like I'm trying to help and I'm trying to serve and I'm going through all these things. And usually it's a judgmental person who's reading into the situation, right? Who just all of a sudden kind of figures out, I know why she is the way she is. I know why he is the way he is. I just understand that's just how it is, and taking time to judge and bite. I love what the reality is, or in verse number 5, is the same thing that we ought to do, is just shake it off. Just shake it off. I mean, just to get done with it and shake it off, you know, and not, if you're the victim, don't sit down and feel sorry for yourself. Don't sit there and just think, why in the world are they picking on me? I'm trying to do right, and then they're reading in. They're like, well, I can't believe they said that. And maybe they had no idea what they said. Maybe they're just barely getting through. They have no idea what it is. We're so judgmental, aren't we, church? I mean, so many times we just read into things, and we do it. And instead of extending grace and being kind, because you don't know what people are going through, instead of doing that, we just take time to crucify somebody or talk bad about them, and this doesn't help. It doesn't bring unity. And Paul just doesn't stop. He just shakes it off and then just keeps on impacting other people. It's crazy. Don't sit down and feel sorry for yourself. I read a story about a guy who was feeling sorry for himself about how nasty and awful people were being, and he's taking care of his baby boy, and they're standing on the floor, and finally he gets this text, and he starts crying about it. He just can't take it anymore. And so you think you're in private because you have a little baby that doesn't know what's happening. And so the baby's there beside, and he starts crying, and the baby takes his pacifier out and hands it to his dad. Just here. You know, sometimes it's just, I could use one of those sometimes, right? Paul doesn't do this. He just keeps on going. He keeps on going. When you read and see that in verse 7 and 8, we didn't read it, but he was taking time to minister to the chief's father as he was going through some type of fever and intestinal issues and was able to heal him. And Paul ministers then to the chief's people. Folks, he's a prisoner. He's gotten bit by a snake and taken advantage of, and now he's still serving people. He's still taking time to love on people. Here's the thing. We're all being watched. People are watching you to find out if your faith really is everything that you say it is. And if we're going to capitalize on this, we have to use every opportunity to magnify Christ, to magnify him, to make much of him, to lean upon him. When injured, one of the best things you can do is to keep impacting the lives of other people. easiest thing you can do is sit down and feel sorry for yourself, but to impact the lives of other people, to say, you know what, I am feeling a little burned right now, but I'm going to show up and get involved in the choir. I'm going to show up and get plugged into ministry around here. I'm going to show up and help people get rides in the parking lot. I'm going to be in the parking. Hey, we need people in the parking lot helping to park cars. We've done a great job reorganizing all of that. We need more people out there saying, I'm willing to go out and do that. I'm willing to get plugged into the nursery. I'm going to get plugged in. I'm going to take time in the midst of me going through the trial of my life to still impact other people. And it really doesn't matter if anybody doesn't understand why I do it, or I know why she's doing that. I know why he is the way he is. Man, just for fooey on that. Like, just shake it off and keep going for the glory of God. Get out and love somebody. When you're stranded, serve the needs that you see. When you're impacted, when you're injured, impact the lives of other people. But as the infomercial says, but wait, there's more. There's more. And we read about it a moment ago, that Paul, in the midst of all of this, is now branded. And here's what I read down. This last little point here. When branded, believe the best of God. Believe that he is good, regardless of what you're going through. He is good. He is so good. We just sang about it. When you're branded, this is unbelievable. You notice that he was branded unjustly. It's crazy. He's a prisoner, a political pawn. He's been labeled a false teacher, a dissenter, and the islands branded him. They don't even know him. Ever had somebody label you? Sure you have. Typecast. I know who you are, and I know what you're all about, and I've seen your kind before. I know you church people. I know you're all, I understand you Baptist. I understand you folks. The islanders branded Paul a murderer when they saw the snake bite him. He didn't deserve that either. Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5:11 records Jesus' words here. It says, blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. You know, it's not unusual for God's servants to be branded. D.L. Moody was called Crazy Moody. You can read stories on that. Billy Sunday was accused of preaching for money, which is crazy because he was a Major League Baseball player and he left all of that. Charles Stanley wrote of being branded in his book, The Source of My Strength, when a man getting up in a leadership meeting starts hollering and cursing and swearing at him. A church meeting bit by someone that thought he could trust. A pastor by the name of W.A. Criswell, at 84 years of age and over 50 years of ministry, was labeled by a former staff member as a power-hungry tyrant. You ever been branded unjustly? Someone puts a label on you? Well, he not only is branded unjustly, he's branded, then they flip it around and branded ridiculously. Like, you just move from one extreme to the other. Like, he went from, you're a murderer, you're the pit of the earth, to, you must be a god. I mean, this is crazy. Interestingly enough, Paul didn't die from the snake bite, and people just decided that instead of this, that, man, he must be a really important guy. He must be a god. There's only one explanation for this, or so they thought, leading us to one conclusion, that if your confidence is rooted in people, you'll spend your life very confused and very frustrated. People are fickle. We are, even ourselves. How fast our opinions change about things and about people. In the midst of being branded and accused, which by the way, so was Christ, right? In the midst of all of that, the Apostle Paul shows us how to respond. What do you do when you're stranded, when you're wounded, when you're labeled? I'm going to tell you a passage that I ran to and have been this year out of Isaiah 43. I want you to read this with me, if you would, as I read out loud. He says, but now thus saith the Lord that created thee. Isn't it good to know who made you? Isn't it good to know your creator? He says, and I formed you. "Fear not, for I have redeemed thee." You know, if you have nothing else, you have your salvation. You got something going for you. "I have called you by name." Isn't that something? Then he says this, "Thou art mine." Isn't this something? You belong to the creator of the universe. I've created you. I've formed you. He says, and you're mine. Look at this. "When you pass through the waters, I will be with thee. Through the rivers, they shall not overflow thee. And when you walk through fire, thou shalt not be burned, neither shall the flame be kindled upon thee." Look at this. "For I am the Lord your God. I am your God. And I will never, 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 never leave you or forsake you." He'll never let you go, church. And that's how, when you're stranded, you can say, "You know what? Nothing else matters. I can serve other people." When you're injured and people attack you, you can say, "I can just keep on impacting other people, and who cares?" And when branded and when labeled and when name called and when things are stamped on your name, you can just say, "I'm just going to believe the best of God and keep on going." Why? Because my God has made me and he's formed me and he says, "Fear not," and he's put this in my life for a reason. And I don't understand the why, but I know there's a reason, and I'm going to trust and I'm going to believe the best of God. Five quick takeaways for us this morning that I need to say and you need to hear. Trust God's word. I don't know what type of uncharted path that you're on, but trust God's word. You know, Paul was told that he was going to go to Rome. God said, "You're going to go to Rome," and no silly little snake bite's going to stop that. God has told you that he's going to be with you. God has told you that heaven is your home. God has told you that he's going to provide your needs. God has told you he knows the hairs that are on your head. God has told you. God has given you a church such as this and has given you the blessings he has given you. You can trust his word. Trust his word. Next, keep on going. When Paul was bit, he shook it off and kept serving. Satan is going to continually be striking at your life. And sometimes he's going to use some of the people closest to you to do that. But he doesn't want us to stop doing what he has given us to do, nor does he want us to stop being the person that God wants us to be. Next, to serve others. Kind of reiterated in a point earlier, but I put it in here again. Paul was too busy serving others and building a fire to stop because he was bit or to stop because he was name called. Just because he was accused, just said, "I'm going to keep serving. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to show up to 111. I'm going to go out and knock on doors on Tuesday night. I'm going to take time to get into quiet. I know I'm tired. I'm going to show up on Sunday afternoon. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah, I know it's hot and sweaty. I'm going to show up in the parking lot. Yeah, I know I got to get here early for church, but I'm going to be here and I'm going to greet the doors. And yeah, I know I'm working in the nursery. I understand all of this, but I'm just going to keep on serving." And people can just be talking however they want to talk and saying whatever they want to say. I'm just going to keep serving other people. Next, let the Lord protect you. Those who saw this, they knew nothing of Paul, but yet they labeled him an evil person and a murderer. And Paul didn't stop to answer his critics. You find that interesting? I do. He didn't stop and try to chase down this rumor that he heard or chase down what they had said, but instead just said, "I'm just going to be faithful. I'm just going to get up. I'm going to get up tomorrow and do what I did today. And I'm going to get up the next day and do what God has me to do that day. And I'm just going to keep doing. I'm not going to go chasing my tail or trying to find different things." You want to defend yourself. I want to defend myself. Don't do it. Let God defend you. Just show up. Serve. Show up. Love people. Show up. Do what you're supposed to do. Finally, I want you to remember this. Remember, God is in control. I don't know what you're going through today. But I know that failure, fear, frustration, none of that has to be your final story. None of it. Don't let it be. Don't let it be your final story. Trust God. Keep going. Serve others. Let God protect you. And remember that God is in control.
Thank you again for listening to this audio sermon. We pray that it has been a blessing to you. For more sermons or if you have any questions, log on to www.fbcbelong.com.